Hello, and welcome to Misspoken, a Lady Live lit show featuring writers, comedians, actors, and bloggers exploring a new theme each month. This is Rosamund Lannan, and I host the show with Jasmine Davila. The following is a recording of our April 26th, 2017 show at the Gallery Cabaret. This month's theme was letters, and featured Leanne Yopes, Lisa Hillerin, and Anna Wolf. Join us for our next show on May 31st. The theme is Breaking the Law. For more information, you can find us at miss-spoken.com.
Hey guys, we're starting the show.
We are.
It's happening.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? You were asking. Sorry.
I mean, you can respond as well.
Sorry.
let's just keep going.
Okay, fine. Cool. Fine. You want to start?
Yeah, sure. All right. Hello. And welcome. Hi. Hi. Okay. Welcome to Misspoken. We are a Lady Live lit show featuring personal essays by female identifying writers. Yay! I think that's the first time I've said, you know, Lady Live lit, female identifying. I've cobbled it together awkwardly for probably the show's entire career.
Yeah, and
that was good. Female identifying, like, sounded really smooth.
Yeah.
Okay, the people up here, we are your hosts. My name is Rosamund Lannan.
And I'm Jasmine Davila. Hi.
Hi.
You can find us here at the Gallery Cabaret on the last Wednesday of every month. Each month, we take on a new and exciting theme. Tonight's theme is letters.
Woo!
Yeah!
All right, so before we get started, I have a quick question. How many of you, by a show of hands, how many of you still write letters? Dang. Well, you're in for a treat. All right, let's get going. All right, we're going to get... Like, one more, actually, really quick. Not just, like, postcards, because I write postcards, but, like, real full-on, like, page-long letters. Let's see them again. Okay, that's still a substantial amount of people. All right, my story's going to be weird. Let's start out with Anna Wolf. Anna Wolf is a queer and Jewish writer-performer. She's been featured in shows and fests around Chicago and is the co-founder of the online literary magazine and podcast Scout and Birdie. To hear more of her work, check out scoutandbirdie.com, or you can listen to her right now. Anna Wolf.
Hi, everyone. Okay, this is a piece that I wrote recently. It's a real-life story, and it's called Montreal Bay. I open my laptop, and there's a pop-up on the right-hand side of the screen. Reminder, Valentine's Day tomorrow. I hit snooze on that reminder, which seems like an odd way of dealing with Valentine's Day tomorrow, but honestly, I'm okay with that. Because a few minutes ago, I came home to my apartment and found a note on my empty, half-made bed, a note as well as a small chocolate bar that said girl power on the wrapper, and the only copy printed of a photo booth picture of me and her. Her being Montreal Bay, or should I say Mary, my Montreal Bay. But Mary isn't a very sexy name for a butch lesbian, so mostly I will just call her Montreal Bay. Montreal Bay was my Valentine this year. This is significant because she was my first lady Valentine. I kissed a girl for the first time last year. Her name was Val, and I've only been kissing girls ever since. Montreal Bay and I met when my family went on vacation to Montreal over winter break. For 14 hours, I sat in a car with my family, who I am not completely out to, which bothers me. It bothers me because my family and I are really close. We tell each other everything, but the subtle hints and the less subtle hints I've made about my queerness have been met with little to no response, which leads me to believe they know, but they're just pretending to not know. And it bothers me. So partly as a coping mechanism and partly as a silent act of rebellion, I spend most of the 14-hour car ride swiping through Tinder. I match with ladies all throughout Michigan, onto Ontario, and all the way up to Montreal. Like Hansel and Gretel leaving a trail of breadcrumbs behind them on their journey. Except my trail was marked not by breadcrumbs, but by soft butchs and non-binary cuties. I update my Tinder profile to visiting Montreal for the week. Show me where the cool kids hang out. I match with a girl named Mary. She messages me saying she knows where all of the cool kids hang out and she would be my tour guide at 10 p.m. if I was free. Montreal Bay picks me up from my hotel. She is dressed in tight skinny jeans, a button-up short-sleeve jean shirt, and a black snapback that she wears backwards, which could be an outfit that any of the girls I have dated would wear. My best friend Jen describes my type pretty accurately as girls who dress like stylish Asian men. Montreal Bay took us to a very swanky bar in the basement of an old building. The room was dimly lit with Christmas lights. She puts her hand on my leg when she laughs, and she says my name often, like, Anna, you absolutely need to visit this restaurant before you leave. The food is killer. Her accent is indescribable, not because it's so sexy or anything, but because it was like a mashup of all the places she had lived. French-Canadian, Australian, Egyptian. She was funny when she talked. She could say, and she did say, stupid things, but they seemed endearing with her conglomerate of accents. After a couple of strong mixed drinks, we're tipsy, and we make out in her car outside of my hotel. She lives in the suburbs, so we can't go back to her place. So we park the car behind a nearby high school and have sex in her backseat. And this continues for the next 3 weeks. Three nights, not weeks. That would be a lot. Next 3 nights. She picks me up at 10 p.m. after a day of sightseeing with my family. She takes me to a new, dimly lit bar. We drink strong mixed drinks and make out. And then we park behind a nearby high school and have sex in the backseat of her car. I sneak back into my hotel room that I'm sharing with my little brother and my little sister around 3 to 4 a.m. And I wake up at 7 a.m. For the rest of the vacation, I wear scarves to hide the hickeys on my neck, and I work hard not to fall asleep at breakfast. On the last night of the vacation, we say goodbye. Montreal Bay and I decide that we'll stay in touch. We'll be pen pals. And she has a close friend who's studying at University of Chicago, so maybe she'll come visit one day. It's simple and sweet and lovely. Back in the States a few weeks after the vacation, Montreal Bay and I text occasionally. I can't remember how it happens exactly, but we start sexting all the time. I've never sexted much before, so I call my best friend Jen to ask for advice. Jen says, as a writer, I could look at this as a writing exercise. And I quickly go from a sexting noob to an old pro, tailoring my writing style and tone to suit the mood, using variety and mediums to keep things interesting. A descriptive text here, followed by some short bullet points, maybe sprinkle in a picture occasionally, or a voice recording, or a short Snapchat video, or that tool on iPhones where if you turn the texting page sideways, you can draw a picture. We're sexting all the time. It's hardly even sexual for me at this point. I hide my phone when I'm in public because chances are Montreal Bay has left me an explicit text, which is exactly what I'm expecting when I receive a text from her one afternoon. But to my surprise, the text reads, "You are going to be so excited. I bought a plane ticket to Chicago and I'm coming to visit you next week." A week passes, and with little planning on my part, Montreal Bay is landing in Chicago and I'm at the airport to pick her up. First thing she does when she sees me is hands me a postcard that reads, "I knew I would see you again one day, maybe. You are smart and into art. I hope you never have to hear me fart. You're all about pussy power. Oh, baby, I cannot wait to eat your flower. I'm excited for this weekend away and for today and the next day because I get to spend it with you. Woohoo." For the next 3.5 days, or 84 hours, we will be together nonstop. Here are the highlights from the weekend. I pick her up from the airport and we make out. We quickly go back to my apartment and have sex. We meet up with her friend who studies at University of Chicago and his uppity hipster girlfriend in Wicker Park. We get drunk and walk around an art gallery. She is always holding my hand. We go back to my place and have sex for another few hours. I fall asleep for an hour and wake up. We take 2 shots of Fireball. We go to FKA. We get in line outside the bar directly behind my ex-girlfriend Val and her new partner. I panic and run into a nearby convenience store. I compose myself and join Montreal Bay back in line. The line is very long, and Montreal is upset with how many men are in line. She yells loudly, "If you don't have a vagina, then go home." Sidebar, there is so much wrong with this statement, I don't even know where to begin. My ex and her new partner, who are wearing matching pom-pom hats, are beyond appalled. My ex says, "Plenty of people who identify as women don't have vaginas, and they deserve to be here just as much as you," which is true. And Montreal Bay's arm is around me throughout this entire interaction, and I think I'm going to die. I think about the possibility of getting into the bar, losing Montreal in the crowd, and going home without her, but all of her stuff is at my place, so it just wouldn't work. To cope with my extreme discomfort, I get ridiculously drunk and aggressively make out with Montreal Bay in front of my ex. I throw up outside of FKA. We go back to my apartment. She falls asleep. I cannot sleep because she snores so loudly. After a night of not sleeping, I wake up to a text from my ex saying that she was glad to see me with someone else last night at FKA. The text ends with her saying, "Looks like you two were having a good time." I go into the bathroom and cry. I feel guilty for going into the bathroom to cry because she came all the way from Montreal to see me. We go to the Bean. We take couple-y pictures at the Bean. We watch ice skaters. We bicker because I say I don't always want to be holding her hand. I lie and say it's because I'm not that into PDA. We meet up with Jen. We walk down State Street. I roll my eyes because she says she wants to go to PacSun. PacSun is a store that emo high schoolers with skateboards shop at. Sidebar, do you know any 30-year-olds who shop at PacSun? She is 30 years old. Jen asks me how things are going, and I tell her that maybe 84 hours together nonstop was not the greatest idea. We leave Jen and go home and have sex. We go out for Valentine's Day dinner. We eat sushi and drink fancy wine. We meet up with her friend and his uppity hipster girlfriend in a bar in Wicker Park. We take photo booth pictures. We go home. I can't sleep because she snores so loudly. We wake up and meet up with her friend and his uppity hipster girlfriend in Wicker Park. We eat expensive food, and I worry about how much money I've been spending on this weekend. We go home. We bicker over what to do that night. She wants to go out for her last night here, but I say I don't want to spend any more money. We get pizza and bicker over who should pay for it. I say I've been spending a lot of money, and she says that she's the one who bought a plane ticket to visit me, and I yell, I never told you to do that. We take a break from each other, me in my room and her in my living room. We eat the delivered pizza in silence. We fall asleep on opposite ends of my couch watching Ants on Netflix. I wake up and apologize for fighting the night before. I get ready for work. I teach a one-hour theater class on Monday mornings. I kiss her before I leave, and we make plans to get lunch before I take her to the airport. She says, see you when you get back. I leave to go to work for an hour. I come home an hour later. I open the door to my bedroom and see a note on my empty, half-made bed, a note as well as a small chocolate bar that says girl power on the wrapper and the only copy printed of a photo booth picture of me and her. The note reads, Anna, I left. I wanted to tell you face to face, but I know how important today is for you. It's just my normal job. I didn't want to fuck that up for you. Honestly, deep down inside, I know you already know this, but we are just not for each other. This may hurt at first, because trust me, I am sad about this too, but soon you will see if you don't already. I am going to go see Ravi because it is my last few hours here, and I will not see him again until next Christmas. You deserve to be with someone who compliments you. I truly believe you only really liked the idea of me. It hurt at first, but now I see that I'm just not right for you, and I don't think you're right for me either. I had an amazing time, though. Please know that. Please look back and smile. XXX Mary. And she was gone. And all of her stuff is gone. And everything that she had brought for me is now laying in an organized line on my bed. All the stuff that she had already given me and that was in different areas of my house, she had gathered and placed on my bed. Along with this book, which she had not given me. I had bought myself and we had never even talked about it, so I don't know what it was doing in that pile. The second I finished reading the note, Jen calls me and I immediately start bawling. I didn't even like her. I'm just mad that I didn't get to break things off myself. I didn't get to end things on my own terms. I open my laptop and there is a pop-up on the right-hand side of the screen. Reminder, Valentine's Day tomorrow. I hit snooze on that reminder. I clear her stuff off my bed and for the first time in 84 hours, I fall asleep. Thank you.
Our next reader is Rosamund Lannan. Hey. Hey, what's up? The product of 9 years in San Francisco and 8 years in St. Paul, Rosamund Lannan is pleasantly surprised to have lived in Chicago for over a decade. These days, she co-hosts Lady Live Lit Show Misspoken, edits Story Club magazine, and tries to write essays that make you feel things or, at the very least, laugh. So here's
Rose. I wish people still wrote letters. For me, this phrase conjures an image of a bespectacled young woman staring wistfully out a window over her typewriter, wearing a t-shirt with Emily Dickinson's face. She's probably holding a steaming mug of Earl Grey, and the mug also has a picture of Emily Dickinson's face. She's definitely wearing a cardigan. And the thing is, like, I don't wish that. I don't wish we still wrote letters. Like, letters are really nice. I like getting mail that's not a credit card offer. But, like, postcards. Postcards are really cool. Postcards are where it's at. But you know what I really like? I really like email. Email's great. You click a button and someone gets your message instantly, just like that. I love email. I love technology. I love the internet. The light speed of communication is amazing. I carry a tiny computer in my pocket, and in the space of 5 bus stops can send messages to someone thousands of miles away. And don't get me wrong, I like the feeling of paper beneath my fingers. Physical books will always have a place in my heart, and I own many of them and will continue to acquire them. But you know what can hold a lot of books? A Kindle. It's slim and light and slides out easily out of your bag. And I'm sorry, Emily Dickinson, that's not a tragedy. It's a goddamn miracle. To be sure, the aesthetics of the past are appealing. I mean, I'm a 30-year-old white lady in an urban area. Of course I like mid-century furniture. I look good in dresses from the 50s. I love the advertisements of the 20s, the French girl style of the 60s, the children's movies of the 80s, but I don't wish people still wrote letters. I just don't care. I don't want that to be the primary form of communication. And there's definitely something personal about handwriting and a paper, but like, you can get a lot of feelings out in Helvetica. You can get a lot of emotions out in GChat, you guys. The speed and ease and convenience of the present is magic. I pay my bills on the bus. I control my fertility with a small plastic tube. Skinny jeans are still in style, and they look really good if you're short. So one time I churned butter. I churned butter at a friend's house, and it was pretty fun. We wore bonnets, and we sat on her couch, like, squishing away, churning the butter. And it was good butter. It was really good butter. But we also drank wine poured by her husband, and I like fresh, sweet cream butter, but you know what I really like? Egalitarian partnerships. And I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm not sentimental about the analog yesteryear, because beyond its admittedly ample aesthetic charms, I have no desire for the actual return of these times. And when Emily Dickinson announces she wishes people still wrote letters, what I hear is, I find the present complicated and scary, and I long for a simpler time. And she isn't wrong. I mean, the present is complicated and scary, but arguably this has been the case for every person in every time, and no amount of pen and paper is going to smooth that out. I want Emily Dickinson and everyone else with a crush on some earlier time, I want them to pick up a history book. I mean, you don't have to care about data science and automation, but the past is pretty bad for most people, though, don't fall into a narrow white slice. And so I don't get the desire to go back to scribbling by candlelight. But on some level, I guess I kind of get it. I'm not a religious person, but I do make up my own prayers. And one prayer that I used to say a lot was that I was happy to be alive in this time. And I don't say that much these days, because I got really used to Obama's promise of hope and change. Even though he didn't always make good on it, and I will take anyone on, I agree, I'll take any one of his criticisms. With Obama, I felt like I had someone in my court. I grew up with presidents that were pretty uninspiring on a personal level, even when they weren't terrible. Like, even when they didn't get us into wars, like, they didn't look like me, they weren't anything close to me. And then came Obama, and he was a lot closer to a real person, and he was smart, and I never thought we'd elect a black person. I thought our country was way too racist. And as it turned out, we were too racist. And we are too racist. And now we have Trump. And because of that, I can't speak of the future with as much confidence, although I try. I try a lot. So people really like to talk about how we're all doomed. You know, you've probably heard these conversations like, are we, oh, if we're even alive this time next year, you know, everything's doomed, we're all going to die. You know, I'm so glad I don't have kids. And I kind of wish people would stop saying that last one, because it's kind of awful. Like, don't say, like, I wish I don't have kids. Some of your friends do have kids or want kids, and saying, like, you know, I'm so glad about that. Like, that, just stop saying that. If you say that, this is my personal message to you, just stop. It's kind of crummy. But when people go on about doomsday, I try to punch holes in it. I talk about, like, the long arc of history and how this is the last gasp of fundamentalism and how your racist uncle will die someday and then he won't be able to vote because he's dead. So I try to bring these things up. And I'm pretty sure I'm both ineffective and annoying. And the truth is, I don't want to let on that I'm scared. Like, I'm really scared. I mean, we have a giant toddler president, and he courts nuclear threat. Congress threatens to disassemble the right to a healthy body, and meanwhile, the earth gets warmer and warmer, and it terrifies me. And that's hard, because I always like to say I'm a futurist, and now I'm kind of torn between futurism and fatalism. But despite all that, I don't long for a simpler time. No amount of pen and paper is going to bring back an authenticity and ease that was never really there to begin with. I mean, vintage machinery is not going to save us, although maybe the internet will. You can grow your victory garden, but we're breeding out most varieties of banana, and banana splits are really good, you guys. I don't want to leave my kids a world without banana splits. But I can't go back. I can't, you know, embrace this promise of the past. I think it's because things didn't start getting really good for me until a few years ago. And I think this is why, you know, because things weren't so great until recently, I don't really have, like, a big boner for the before times. I liked parts of being a kid, but my family life was pretty rough. Like, you know what I really like? Being an adult. I don't have glory days. For a long time for me, there's been no time like the present. Though, as things change, the present starts to feel like the more recent past. I think that more than anything, more than letters, more than anything, I want more now. Because now means that we're not doomed. Now means that we still have time. And for me, now was about 6 years ago. So I don't write letters, but I do think about a 4th of July party in 2011. That was a really good year for me. Obama was president. My hair was long. It was summer. And the sun was going down, but the buildings were still warm from the day. And at this 4th of July party, I was about two beers in, like that really perfect buzz where, like, you're feeling kind of good, but you're not thinking you're funny yet. Like, it was a really good point for me. And I was sitting on my friend's back steps, and we were waiting for the boom and burst. We were waiting for the fireworks, and my boyfriend's hand was on my knee, and all I could think about was how much I liked him. And all I could do was love our friends' faces in the evening light. And we sat out there, and fireworks burst over Union Park, all red and green and gold. And for one of the first times in my life, I forgot to be afraid. And, like, I'll look to the future forever and always, but I'm not ready for that party to end. Okay, we are on to the second half of our show. I used to have a teacher in elementary school who would, like, just talk quietly like this until we realized she was talking and we'd quiet down. It's kind of creepy, though, actually. Like, I just remember it being unsettling, but it did work. But I promise I will not do that to you guys. I will just yell. Okay, we're starting out, the second half of our show. Next up, we have my lovely co-host, Jasmine Davila. Jasmine Davila is the fast-talking, thoroughly charming co-host of Vital Social Issues and Stuff, a podcast about pop culture from a lady's point of view. She also co-hosts this show, Where You're At. Right now, you can find Jasmine on the web by googling Jasmine Davila, and on Twitter at Jasmine D. This is Jasmine.
All right. Hey, Patrick. I'm at O'Hare finally. It only took me 5 minutes to get through security because guess who has global entry like a boss? That's right, me, your favorite sister. Thank you for not bugging me about how this is my fourth trip to England in 5 years. Even though you wish I would go to different places like Italy, where I've never been, Japan, the land of your actual birth, or anywhere in Latin America, because, you know, it's there. But the thing is, I'm saving those places. I'm saving them for when you're well, maybe even cured. You see, you'll be off dialysis, and you'll have, like, a newly donated kidney in place with the other two bum kidneys that don't work anymore, which is weird because you'll have three kidneys, and that's just insane. And we will take our time as we travel. We will go to Tokyo so we can cuddle kitties in cat cafes. We could put on matching berets and stroll the streets of Paris. I'll make you come to London where you can show me that one stand with the duck tongue sandwiches. We're boarding now. I'll take pictures of the food on the plane, and yes, I will call Dad for his birthday when I land tomorrow. Your sister, Jasmine. Dear Nadine, Here in Cambridge, all of the college buildings look just like the campus where we went to school, but like on steroids. The buildings aren't necessarily bigger, but they're like super medieval, and they're like, you know, or Georgian, or super gothic with like statues of like old kings and like, you know, covered in bird shit or whatever. Out on the King's Parade, our fellow tourists are bored French teenagers. All the girls wear the same pair of Adidas Stan Smith sneakers. The boys wear their track pants very high and very tight. Everybody is glued to their phones. Nobody removes their backpacks. We spend the last afternoon of our time in Cambridge drinking a bottle of wine on Jesus Green, where it's a beautiful park and there are tons of daffodils and trees in bloom. There are dogs running around, other wine drinkers, and it would seem, according to the breeze that just passed over my head as I lie here on the ground, people smoking pot. Now, I'm not sure that the romantic poet William Blake would have had weed in mind when he wrote the line, "England's green and pleasant land. I hope I can be forgiven for making the connection." Miss you, Jasmine. Dear Carly, I just ate 2 Cornish pasties while lying in bed here at the Longboat Inn. It wasn't necessarily one of my goals for this trip to eat 2 greasy meat pies in one sitting, and yet I still feel a sense of real accomplishment. Shopkeepers and bartenders keep asking if I'm visiting Cornwall because of that show, Poldark. You know, the one from public television. It stars a sexy, occasionally shirtless dude whose name I don't actually know. Because why else would I be in a beach town where it's windy and cold and every day is a bad hair day? Congratulations on your engagement. I can't wait to hear all about it when I get back. Love, Jasmine. Dear my friends on Facebook, thank you for the birthday greetings. I was so thrilled to hear from you all. I miss you all so much. I don't want to single out anybody, but I wanted to share this post from my brother Patrick because it made me laugh. He said, "What's the best rice? Jasmine. What's the best tea? Jasmine. Who was my favorite actor on A Different World? Jasmine Guy. Who's the best Disney princess? Let's say for the sake of this post on your wall, it's Princess Jasmine. And then happy birthday. I can't wait for all of you to see the crappy pictures I've managed to take once I've uploaded them. Just look for the folder named hashtag Spring Brexit. My dear Amy, I thought I'd be able to write anything, like essays or blog posts, even fan fiction, while I was here, but I'm exhausted. I get ideas and prompts, but I don't have the energy to do much more than create a note on my phone and hope I remember it later. As a fellow writer, I know you would understand my frustration. So I've turned to eavesdropping, stealing turns of phrase and ideas for the day when I can write something longer than a postcard. The tube in London is no good for listening to other people's conversations. It is too loud in the carriages and everybody stares at their phones anyway. Sometimes the only other voice you will hear will be that of the automated system announcing the arrival of the next train. But bus passengers tend to be super chatty, always talking about how they need to top up their Oyster cards. They don't think there will be a queue at the cinema. Perhaps they should pop over and get tickets now. But before they go, they will call their husbands on their mobiles and make sure there's room in their schedules. To the ghost of Roger Ebert. 30 years ago, you wrote a book with a former professor of yours. The book is long out of print, but used copies can be found on the internet. I should know because I've bought 3 of them. It began after you died 5 years ago. Like the rest of Chicago and the world, it seemed I mourned your passing. I was a fan of your work as a new reviewer. I followed you on Twitter. I loved your blog. It was there that I learned what it was like to lose the ability to speak and to eat. It was there that I understood the depth of your love for your wife, Chaz, and your family. It was there that I learned that your favorite city was London, which is mine too. So that brings me back to the book that you wrote, The Perfect London Walk. Purported to show its readers the route as determined by your co-author Daniel Curley almost 50 years ago of your favorite walk in the city. I remember thinking as I popped a copy into my Amazon cart that I'd remember to pack the book on my next trip to London so I could take that walk in memory of you. I own 2 copies because the first was mislaid temporarily. Copy 3 belongs to my friend Christina, who had been traveling me through England with me all this week. So we attempted the walk on Sunday, April 2nd. It was beautiful. Now, this is my second attempt, because the first attempt, having occurred in the early days of 2015, that started out well enough, but, you know, we made it as far as this grove where the poets John Keats and Samuel Taylor Coleridge were rumored to have met once, long, you know, years ago. But we got lost, and in my stubbornness, I insisted we couldn't use our phones to find the Spaniards and the next milestone on the journey. But all of a sudden, I felt weird, and then my friend Mike said I looked strange, and, you know, not well at all. So we retraced our steps, ordered ciders at the garden gate, And in a few minutes, I was blind. Or something like it anyway. I couldn't see anything, nothing but a sort of soft white light, as if a flashlight or a torch, as they call them in England, had been stuck in my face. I didn't know what to do. Neither did Mike, who was on the verge of calling an ambulance. I felt clammy, and I tried to remember if I had taken my medication that morning or not. Was this a blood sugar thing, a heart thing? I know I'm not generally in great shape, but I figured that even my fat ass could manage a slow stroll through a park. Now, before this spell, I had been joking about your ghost, about you, blaming every wrong turn, every splash of mud on my pants and blast of cold wind. I know it wasn't you or any other supernatural force, just the limits of my body, which wasn't quite on the verge of shutdown, but knew better than to let me press on. So back in the present, back to April 2nd, the Sunday, there was no wind or rain. The sun was out. Christine and I ate eggs for breakfast. Then we started the slow walk up Haverstock Hill to begin. And it was fine. Sure, I tended to get anxious at every pause along the way, wondering if I'd faint while ogling postcards in the Keats House Museum. Would my sight leave me again as soon as we got to the top of Parliament Hill? Or would I fall and hit my head on a tree stump? Maybe the most exciting thing that happened is I'm pretty sure I saw the actor who played the governor on The Walking Dead. And when we stopped to have a picnic in a meadow just below Kenwood House, these two dogs appeared seemingly out of nowhere. They licked our faces and whined for scraps of cheese and ham from our sandwiches. This was a good sign, I thought. You had written in your book that if on the walk you got lost, you could always stop a dog, or rather, a person walking a dog, and get directions, because they knew, at the very least, how to find their way home. Thank you. Next up, we have Lisa Hillerin. Lisa Hillerin is a North Dakotan who moved to Chicago via Wisconsin. Lisa is the founder of BikeCampChicago.info, a blog dedicated to car-free camping in the Chicago region. If you'd like to know more about Lisa's bicycles or feelings, follow her on Twitter and Instagram at @yo_uterus.
It was that kind of relationship where you tell yourself, it's not cheating if you're not making out. The kind of relationship, it turns out, I was very predisposed to seek. It all started at science camp, as many relationships do. It was the summer of 2007, 6 years after my sister had attended North Dakota Governor's School, a six-week program hosted on the NDSU campus in Fargo, also known as the closest thing to a city in all of North Dakota. Emily had attended for math and already made an enemy of Mr. Taylor, the math instructor. Sure, she'd learn how to solve a Rubik's Cube, but everything else sounded terrible. However, the draw of 6 weeks any fucking where other than my parents' house a few miles outside of my 1,600-person hometown was too much to resist. So I applied for science. As with any important schooling event, Governor's School concludes with a yearbook signing, where the story begins. "Hugh's had your yearbook for a really long time. What's he writing?" my friends asked as we munched on Cheetos and sipped pop. "I have no idea," I shrugged. But I was also curious. John had had my yearbook for at least 5 minutes, and appeared to have been writing for the whole time. Cameron decided to sneak over and grab a look from behind the couch, crouching low and stepping lightly as to not attract attention. When he returned, there was surprise written all over his face. I looked at him expectantly. "Well, I-L-Y," he wrote on the cover of the yearbook I was signing. "I-L-Y, what does that mean?" I asked. "I don't know. I have no idea." Cameron, forever dramatic, did a full look at the group to build tension and said, "I love you." He just wrote, "I love you" in your yearbook. I was stunned into silence. This was the first time a boy had ever said, "I love you" to me in a way that made me believe him. I had actually promptly broken up with the last boy to say, "I love you" to me. I'm still not sure how I didn't start crying right then and there, but I managed to pull it together and make a couple of excuses to go gather my thoughts in a less crowded area. It was the night before we left, and it may have only been 6 weeks, but they were probably the most intense and meaningful 6 weeks in my previous 17 years of existence. Because everything is really dramatic when you're 17. It had been a slow burn up to this point.
John and I met on the first day, two of four nerds who had two social skills to rub together. We quickly became the king and queen of nerd camp. And one of the most speculated about power couples in the intense gossip circle of 60, 16, and 17-year-olds. However, there was a pretty big problem with the popular theory of our romance. John had a girlfriend. I was crushed. Finally, a decent person who I was very into seemed to be into me, but he had a girlfriend who he couldn't break up with because it would break her heart, right? So, like a 17-year-old idiot, I held on to this idea that maybe it would work out. He'd realize that I'm hot shit and break up with his girlfriend, and I could finally have a relationship of mutual respect. After all, I was the older woman. I understood and appreciated John's intellect, his sense of humor. I always remembered to say thank you anytime he did something nice for me. I deeply felt our mutual attraction. I didn't beat around the bush with what I thought. He found my directness refreshing. He found my tools for dealing with social awkwardness cute. The only thing I couldn't figure out was how some 15-year-old could possibly be better than me. Soon enough, governor school ended, and we both went back home, now separated by a 4-hour drive, me just dying, of the lack of problematically long and frequent hugs and emotional intimacy. While we no longer had the comfort of each other's physical presence, we now had a ton of stamps and cramped writing on college-ruled notebook paper. John and I continued our closeness via USPS with about a 2-day turnaround between mailings. We were able to write 2 times a week. We made each other mixtapes. Mine were way better than his. Just saying, it's true. But my parents weren't really religious and let me listen to whatever I wanted to. We even had a song, Dozed by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. We all make terrible choices as high schoolers. When February rolled around and John found out that he'd be able to invite someone from outside his school to prom, I soon got the letter I was sure would change everything. Despite the prevalence of cell phones and MSN Messenger, he extended the invitation to me via United States Postal Service letter. In the year of our Lord, 2008, I had just been prom-posed to via the successor to the Pony Express. I was dying. Could this finally be the chance to prove that I'm the better woman? Very excited, I messaged him, telling him that I would have to check with my parents because I'm still in high school, but I really wanted to go and I thought they would let me. You know, you can't stop true love. John replied that he had to check with his girlfriend to make sure it would be okay with her. She wasn't allowed to go to the prom because she was only a sophomore. I was 18 years old, and my most hated rival was a 16-year-old girl who I had never met. I still hadn't given up on the possibility of this long-distance relationship, despite knowing that I would likely be moving to Wisconsin at the end of the summer. It was kind of sad. The day of prom finally arrived. I had just not attended my own senior prom the week before because I really didn't care about the whole thing. I got up at 7, and my mom spent 2 hours doing my ass-length princess hair up into twists. I put my dress in my Pontiac Grand Prix and took off for I-94. I drank entirely too much coffee and had to stop every hour and a half, and ended up doing 90 for a while to make it to John's place in time for our evening's plans. It wasn't until I was at his house, getting dressed, that I started to realize just how stupid this all was. We went to get photos taken, and I just felt awkward. When we got to the dance, we got to skip to the short line to take the breathalyzer, because John was the vice principal's son. And, you know, getting really drunk before prom is as North Dakotan as Fleischkugel or Lefse. It's true. I remember feeling like everyone was looking at me, and they all knew what a terrible person I was. When the night was over, I had finally put the idea of our forbidden romance to rest. It didn't matter anymore if we both liked each other. It had never been so obvious that this was a situation that was never going to change. Maybe he thought we could just be good friends and it wouldn't be weird at all. But I knew that wasn't happening. John and I started writing less. I was busy finishing my senior year, and John was a junior. I spent the summer saying my goodbyes to everyone before I moved to rural Wisconsin to start college. Eventually, we didn't write at all. I'm not sure who sent the last letter, but when I packed for school, I put the folder that is overflowing with John's letters in with my things. I would dig them out once or twice a year at school to make myself feel better when I was down, to remember that there was someone out there who truly cared for me. By the time I graduated and moved to Chicago, I hadn't looked at John's letters in over a year. I had finally stopped nursing the fantasy of the relationship we could have had. I still felt really weird when he sent me an invitation to his wedding in his hometown where he still lives. I hadn't been on more than a second date in like 3 years. I later found out that he married the sister of the cellist in Cloud Cult, one of my favorite bands, when he tweeted at me when I talked about going to their show. I felt sort of insecure and kind of just weirded out that he kept popping into my life in all of the most unexpected ways. But while it's true he may have married into Cloud Cult and I'm still single, at least I'm finally living any fucking where else. Sometimes things work out okay for everyone. Thank you.
Lisa, we have to talk about this after, because I also know people in Cloud Cult, because the Midwest is fucking small. Okay, let's get our last read of the night. Leanne Yopes. Leanne Yopes is a Chicago-based stand-up comedian, storyteller, and writer originally from Wisconsin. Leanne, am I doing your last name right? Yes? Yes! When Leanne's not busy gushing over Luke Perry, she also runs a monthly storytelling show about music called Appetite for Rock and Roll Storytelling. You can catch Appetite every second Wednesday at the Elbow Room at 8 p.m. Leanne, when is the next show?
May 10th.
May 10th. All right, let's hear it for Leanne.
It's okay. I know. I don't know how to adjust a mic either. So, yeah. Well, hello, yo, young lovers that I love. I'm Leanne, and I am Rock-a-Freak-a-Potamine, and I'm member number 613. You might be wondering what that is, and that is that I was in the first 1,000 members of Rock-a-Freak-a-Potamus, which is the fan club dedicated to the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I became a Rock-a-Freak-a-Potami when I was 14 in 1995, when One Hot Minute was released. I was a fan of the band before this, but this is when my obsession grew. I saw in the liner notes that you could become a fan club member, and I immediately had my mom write a check. This wasn't my first rodeo with fan clubs. As a kid, I was a member of the Milli Vanilli fan club, the Vanilla Ice fan club, the WWF fan club, before it became the WWE, because I just love the Ultimate Warrior. But this fan club was a little bit different. Not only was I in high school and everything was just escalated to how I felt about it, but it was also run by Blackie Dammit, who happens to be Anthony Kiedis' dad. That means he created the lead singer of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. He referred to himself as the head honcho, and it was a very personable fan club. You would receive letters from him. I would write really stupid things asking about why the band members stood on certain sides of the stage. He would hand write back to me, and I would receive pictures of the band, we would get pre-sale information, all this. But then the big thing was that there is these fanzines. And you were encouraged to submit your picture and address to create pen pal relationships with other fans. And this developed my relationship with Greg Packer from Huntington, New York. All right. These are from my parents' cedar closet. All right. All right, this one is postmarked May 14th, 1996. I'm just going to put these over here. Sorry, guys. Dear Leanne, I saw your name in the picture of you and your son in issue 6 of Rockin' Freakopotamus. I'm one of the new members of the Red Hot Chili Pepper fan club. Thanks to Suzette from East Meadow, who told me all about the fan club. Right on the floor of Madison Square Garden, where we stood in front as I pushed Suzette all the way to the front. A little about me. I'm 5'8" tall. Brown hair. Brown eyes. And a mustache. It was my third time seeing the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I first saw them at Sundance, a small club now out of business, Woodstock, and the Garden. My favorite is Peace of Mind. Guys, it's not a song. It's Soul to Squeeze. And my favorite song is My Aeroplane. Guys, it's simply Aeroplane. Besides the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I also like Metallica, Ozzy, U2, The American Presidents, and Smashing Pumpkins. I'm also a sports fanatic, spelled PH. I like anything and everything about sports. Well, Leanne, I'm sorry I don't have much to say, so I guess I'll go. I hope that you had a great Mother's Day and that you got lots of presents. Take care, Leanne. I do hope to hear from you soon. Love, Greg. So the thing with these letters is that I don't know what I wrote to this man. I only have his response. So this is postmarked September 12th, 1996. Hi, Leanne. How are you? I'm okay. Did you have a good summer? I sure did. In the summer, there's always plenty to do. The beach, concerts, baseball games, and the list goes on. I too enjoy receiving the newsletters like you do. It's nice to know what everyone is up to. The band, the fans, etc. I can't remember when John was in the band, but Dave is cool. Although I didn't get backstage, he came by the backstage entrance and said hi to everyone in New York. Besides the Chili Peppers, the Smashing Pumpkins are cool too. They were at the MTV Video Music Awards, and I was outside watching them be interviewed by Kurt Loder. Besides Smashing Pumpkins, I also like Anthony Kiedis. It's Kiedis, guys. Gavin from Bush, Bella Cavalli, James Hetfield from Metallica, Dennis Rodman, Van Halen with David Lee Roth. Sorry, I can't think of anyone else. I hope you had a good summer, too. I do hope to hear from you soon. Thanks again for writing back, and say hi to your niece and nephew and friend from the latest picture. Love, Greg. Then this one. It was sent in a full package. That's over there. That's hand addressed. I don't know the date on this one, guys, but three-pager. Dear Leanne, hi. How are you? I'm okay. I see you had as fun of summer as I did. Now that winter is here, almost, I can't wear my t-shirts and shorts anymore. It's that time for jeans and sweaters. Living here in New York, the city that never sleeps, I know there's always plenty to do. I see that you're going to see the Smashing Pumpkins on October 1st at the Bradley Center. We just had them here for 3 nights in New York at the Garden. Although I didn't see them here, I've seen them 2 years ago at Lollapalooza. You'll like them. When you do go to see them, wear the shirt that I'm sending you. That's why it was a package, guys. What? With this letter. And if you can find a way to smuggle a camera in the Bradley Center, send me some band pictures. Especially Billy. As best as you can, and include a picture of you with your new shirt on at the show. I got you the shirt and the K-Rock sticker outside the show on my way back from the Yankee game against Baltimore. A biggie. As of now, the magic number for the Yankees, a combination of Yankee wins and Baltimore losses, is 4. I know they will be the new AC East champions. Is it AL? I can't read his handwriting. I don't know. I don't know sports. But so how is Mall of America, in quotes? I've heard a lot about it, and it's really huge. I know someday I'll make it there. I've been out of the East Coast only 4 times. Once to Sheboygan, to visit friends. Once to Denver for the Rock the Rockies Festival. Once to Oklahoma City to see the bombing site. And once to Houston to visit friends. Since you live there, I guess if you see it once, you've always seen it. I'm never bored with taking the train to New York. I love the city, and I love seeing all the tourists there. When the tourists come, it's nice to know their backgrounds, native cities, what their area is like, etc. I'm also ready for Halloween. I also like seeing everyone. Both children and adults. In costume. That whole time from Halloween to New Year's is my favorite time. I love going to the ball in Times Square with all the people there. I also like the Christmas and Thanksgiving dinners and seeing the Christmas cartoons. Do you have any favorites? I like the Grinch, Charlie Brown, Frosty, the Flintstones, Elvin and the Chipmunks, and Santa Claus is Coming to Town. At the MTV Awards, I saw the Choose or Lose bus, but I missed Beck performing on the bus. I was by the stage entrance. It's hard to see everything. I was lucky enough to see most of the bands and artists come and go. One of them was the Smashing Pumpkins, coming and going from an interview with Kurt Loder and Tabitha Soren. Tabitha remembers me from Woodstock, and Kurt remembers me from Madonna Pajama Party at Webster Hall. You said that you were 5'7" tall with brown hair and brown eyes. I grew, I'm 5'8". You never mentioned how old you are or what you like doing in your spare time. As for me, I'm 32 years old. 5'8" tall, brown hair, brown eyes, and a mustache. In my spare time, I like concerts, sports, the city, traveling, and movies, although I haven't been to movies lately. I guess I'll go now, as I probably said enough. Hope all is well with you and yours. I do hope to hear from you soon. Take care and wish your nephew a happy 5th birthday for me. Also enjoy all your goodies. I'm sending you including a program from one of the festivals I went to this summer. Love, Greg. So then the last of the series, which was sent with a Christmas card, November 30th, 1996. Dear Leanne, hi, how are you? I'm okay. I'm glad you liked your Smashing Pumpkins stuff. I knew you would. Here in New York, we've just getting over winning the World Series as well as the parade. The parade was really awesome. Now that the World Series is over, Thanksgiving is here, and soon to be Christmas. For Thanksgiving, I went to the parade. Then I came home and went to a church-sponsored Thanksgiving dinner. To make a long story short, my family is all scattered all over the East Coast, so it's hard for all of us to get together around the holidays. The last concert that I saw was The Who at Nassau Coliseum. Yeah, it wasn't sold out, so I guess they don't have the same following that they used to. Burn. However, they still attract a crowd. Hopefully, I'll see Kiss on the 29th at Nassau. They're also doing a New Year's Eve show at the Meadowlands, but I'll be watching the ball in Times Square. Besides concerts and games in my spare time, I like movies, travel, dinner, summertime activities, trips to the city, good conversation, kids, and good people. Don't worry about yourself being 15 and me being 32. Soon to be 33 on December 18th. If you look closely at the newsletter, everyone is encouraged to write to everyone else, no matter how old you are. Besides, you really are mature for 15 years old, as you help raise your niece and nephew. That's important to any guys. It shows that you're mature for your age. Besides, a girl in your age group and up should appreciate an older guy. The thought is very flattering to me. I do hope that someday you'll have kids as of your own. You'll make a great mom. Greg. When you write back to anyone or do anything, age is not just a number, but the person inside. Well, Leanne, take care and write back when you can. Happy holidays. Love, Greg. Considering this is the last, I'm going to mark 1996 as the first time I ghosted somebody. What? Well, in case you're wondering what Greg is up to, I have Googled him. Because I kept all of these in my parents' cedar closet because I knew I would need them someday. And he has a self-made Wikipedia page where he describes himself as a man about town. And in 2007, he was first in line to buy an iPhone. Thanks, guys.
Time for Leanne, because I need a fucking cigarette.
Yeah, seriously. That was awesome. Woo! Oh, God.
Okay.
So, you want to start?
Yeah, I'll start. That's our show. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, and we would like to thank tonight's readers, Anna Wolf, Manny, Maggie, Tom, you got this.
Maggie Thomas. Anna Wolf. Maggie Thomas. Sack, hold on, my phone just went
Lisa
off.
Lisa Hiller.
Yes, and Lynn Yost. Yay! We'd also like to thank the Gallery Cabaret and you, the audience. You can find out more about us at miss-spoken.com or listen to the past shows on iTunes and Stitcher.
Yeah. So we do this every month. It is Lady Livelet. It is stories by the female identified. So if you like this show, you might be wondering, like, what should I do next? I know. I wonder that every time after this show. But tell your friends. Listen to the podcast. Mm-hmm. Share this on social media.
Yeah.
That is important. Tell everybody how great it was. Talk to your coworkers. Have an awkward lunchtime conversation about Livelet.
Yeah.
Oh, your friend is pointing to your other friend. Okay.
For
I
sure.
I don't know what that means. Oh, you work together. Okay.
Okay, yeah, okay, okay, yeah.
But just be like, it's like The Moth, but with all ladies.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, you know, if they ask, like, you know, when can they come to a show, like, you can bring them back on Wednesday, May 31st. The theme is Breaking the Law.
Breaking the Law!
Yeah!
It's
right. I'm going to have so many stories about my criminal past. So thank you again.
That's not true. Do you actually have a criminal past? I mean, we don't know. You have to show up to find out.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're gonna have this out, still out. Don't even, if you feel like it, I'll come check on it in a few minutes. But thank you so much and have a great night.
Thank you for listening. Visit miss-spoken.com for weekly blog posts, information on our next show, and how to get involved.